Hi, welcome to Weekend Watchlist, a look at what's screening and streaming, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. I'm Mia. There, Mitchell.
Hello.
And together, we'll dig through what's dropping this weekend, last weekend, recent trends on Letterboxd, and we'll also take a peek at our own watch lists, all under 30 minutes or your money back.
Mia, the hierarchy of Weekend Watchlist is about to change. Our old pal Slimothy is out excavating Black Adam's ancient tomb right now. And maybe we'll get the chance to hear from him a bit later on what he finds. But for now, you and I are locked and loaded. We're getting the hype ramped up even higher for Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson in The Banshees of Inisherin. Is that how you told me
yeah,
5 minutes ago it was pronounced?
I know. Inisherin, yeah.
The Banshees of Inisherin, as we all know how it's pronounced. The A24 weepy that has been bringing houses down after Sun, and you and I very excited for George Clooney and Julia Roberts in Ticket to Paradise. We'll get a look at all of these. We'll take a look back to see what everyone thought of last week's releases, community reviews, tag weekend watch list, and of course, we'll talk about our own shuffled watch list later in the show.
But first, we gotta get into the Banshees of Inisherin.
Inisherin.
Inisherin. Yes, PSA for the non-Irish out there. Inisherin. I had been saying Inisherin, so just for all you Americans out there, you know. So this movie is by Martin McDonagh. It is on 61,000 watch lists, and it's coming out with a limited release, even though it should be wide. It's that good. Synopsis. Two lifelong friends find themselves at an impasse when one abruptly ends their relationship, with alarming consequences for both of them. I mean, that's the plot. I've been having fun telling people what it's about because it's like, it's so simple. It's like, there are these two guys on an Irish island and one of them decides they don't want to be friends anymore and the other one doesn't know how to deal with it. And that's the entire movie and it rules.
Yeah, I've been stoked for it, but I don't watch trailers or anything. So I didn't know anything about what it was about until reading the synopsis. And then I'm like, okay, that is not a spoilery synopsis, which I very much appreciate.
Yeah, that's really all you need to know about it. It's just like a character study, a friendship study, really. And for those who are a little bit worried because of Three Billboards, Martin is back in Ireland. So he's back in his home. Back in his home country, he knows what he's talking about here. He's repenting. He's reuniting with Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson. And I was lucky enough to see this at Beyond Fest with like this big sold out crowd. And this movie was getting laughs, laugh after laugh after laugh. So it's really funny, but also deeply affecting and interrogates the complexities of friendship, masculine friendship in particular. You know, I'm always thinking about Mikey and Nikki and the Lighthouse, you know, but of course, yeah, I thought about Mikey and Nikki and the Lighthouse. Okay. Yes. And there's a donkey. That's very cute.
Mikey and Nikki, very, very huge sell, as you know, for me as well. Very huge sell. But I know I'm very excited for Colin Farrell and Brendan Gleeson back. You know, I love In Bruges. I have felt not so great about some of McDonagh's movies since then. So I'm excited for him to be back with that trio reuniting. But I also know one of their co-stars who we like very much is somebody that you have spoken with recently. Tell me a bit about that.
It's true, Mitchell. I was being humble. I was too humble to bring it up, but I did talk to Barry Keoghan, who plays Dominic in the film, who's just kind of this goofy guy who also lives on the island, who Colin Farrell's character is like kind of friends with. He's super, super funny in the movie. So glad I got to talk to him about his relationship with Colin Farrell in general. So if you're a fan of him, we have some juicy content for you coming up.
Yeah, keep an eye out for Mia's full convo with Barry. Will be on Journal very soon. So keep an eye out for that. But Mia, before we move on, I know on your background here, I can see you've got Killing of a Sacred Deer poster in the background. I'm curious, when talking to Barry, did you also eat spaghetti in the nastiest way possible to show him like what a fan you are of his work?
Oh yeah, I brought a plate of spaghetti and I slurped it right next to the microphone, ASMR style.
Perfect. Yeah,
but it was cool to show him my poster because we did the Zoom interview and I was like, I love Killing of Sacred Deer, and I pointed to it. And that was just, I don't know, it's a very nice moment. That doesn't happen often.
I've got one poster behind my back. I spoke to the director of Drive My Car. That's the only milk that I got out of that cow for ever. It's just the one poster behind me.
Still, that's why you have to have a movie poster in your room just in case on the off chance you Zoom interview. Let's read some reviews of Banshees, some Banshee reviews. Here is one from Clint Worthington. Beautifully caustic fable about the difference between kindness and dullness and whether being an asshole artist really makes you more interesting. McDonough's pitch black humor is intact and Ferrell always makes for a beautiful sad sack.
We got a review from Katie Walsh, who's the co-host of the Miami Nice podcast. So Colin Farrell bonafides over there. Katie says, beautiful, funny, horrific, profound, good animals, great sweaters, the best eyebrows in the game. So I haven't seen it. Mia, you can verify. It seems like we're getting our eyebrow fix in for Banshees of Inisherin.
Inisherin.
It's fine. I'll get it eventually.
Yeah, eventually.
Moving on from Colin Farrell thirst to Paul Mescal thirst, all the girlies very excited. After Sun, coming out in limited theaters from A24, directed by Charlotte Wells on 59,000 watch lists. The synopsis, Sophie reflects on the shared joy and private melancholy of a holiday she took with her father 20 years earlier. Memories real and imagined fill the gaps between mini DV footage as she tries to reconcile the father she knew with the man she didn't. Mia, we've been seeing since Cannes, people obsessing over this movie. I've been seeing 4.5, 5 stars across the board from everybody I know. What are your vibes on After Sun?
I have also had the same experience where people are really, really raving about it. And I think that the synopsis is really compelling because I'm very interested in films that deal with the disconnect between reality and memories. And I think that film is a really great medium for exploring kind of the diaphanousness of memories. So I'm excited for this one. I do like Paul Mescal of Normal People.
Pronunciations on point across the board this episode.
Yeah, he's a great actor. He just is simply Normal People. I can't stop saying it. So I am looking forward to it. I trust him. I trust Charlotte Wells. I trust everyone involved.
Yeah, I'm not super familiar. I think the only thing I've seen him in so far is The Lost Daughter, which he's certainly a hot hottie in. Olivia Colman. I get it. I get why she was going for him in that. But I'm excited to see what all the fuss is about with this attractive Irish man.
Oh yeah. I mean, we've got a lot of reviews about this attractive Irish man. most of them are about being really destroyed by him. We got one from Josie that just says, thanks for destroying me. Rafa says, like having your heart ripped out of your chest. Ella says, God, it hurts. So be prepared. It seems like you're really going to take an emotional beating with this one.
Yeah, Jesus. A little bit more words from Brian Tallarico, who says, builds and builds like a memory that overtakes you emotionally in the most unexpected ways. It's so confidently shaped that you don't realize how much it's sneaking up on you until it breaks your heart. A real beauty. I'm excited for it. I love those movies that like you just kind of settle into and then you're an hour and a half in and you're like, why am I having a full-on emotional breakdown right now? Like, I was not prepared for this.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm really looking forward to breaking down in the theater. A very cathartic experience. But, you know, enough about these disgusting feelings and all this tenderness and ooey-gooey stuff. Let's move on to some brawn and vengeance, Mitchell, with Black freaking Adam.
He's here.
Black Adam, he's here and he wants vengeance. So this is directed by Jaume Colet-Serra. It's on 28,000 watch lists. It's coming out wide. You know it's coming out wide. It's a superhero movie. Nearly 5,000 years after he was bestowed with the almighty powers of the Egyptian gods and imprisoned just as quickly, Black Adam is freed from his earthly tomb, ready to unleash his unique form of justice on the modern world.
Wow.
I feel like part of being a good film appreciator is knowing when things are out of your wheelhouse. So I am going to fling it on over to our resident comic book guy, Slim, who knows what the hell he's talking about.
Hey, it's your old pal, Slim. Mia and Mitchell, first of all, you're doing a great job on the show so far. Love what I'm hearing. I'm your resident comic book nerd to explain, hopefully, why people care about Black Adam in the first place. I'm calling in after seeing the movie with my son from a top secret location, aka King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. So Black Adam is like a C-tier comic book character, normally related, connected to Shazam. They have that lightning bolt on their chest. So almost like an evil Shazam, but more or less an anti-hero kind of deal, and just as powerful as Superman. So once The Rock actually started to go through making this movie, it made sense to me, like for his Seven Books Productions, like The Rock gets to be his own Superman in the DCU. I just see dollar signs popping up like ka-ching, ka-ching. I didn't love the movie. I didn't like the movie that much. However, my son gave it 4.5 stars. It has a really diverse cast, which I noticed right at the onset, and I saw it with a really diverse audience, and they loved it. Like Amanda Waller popped up on screen and people were losing their minds. So that's probably more important in the long run. For me, I'm still waiting for The Rock to have that moment where he makes a critically acclaimed movie that also makes a lot of money. One day, still holding that hope for old Slim. Back to you guys.
Well, there you have it, people. I mean, from the comic book man himself, Slim, King of Prussia Town, he is in there giving us the deets on Black Adam. I feel like I know everything I need to know about Black Adam now. I have all the education.
We're geniuses.
We've got some reviews. Other people other than Slim have seen it. Matt Goldberg says, it's fun. The script is a mess. It feels like a bunch of different scripts stacked on top of each other, but it's got a good sense of humor, makes you care about the character relationships, and has an interesting perspective on colonialism and savior tropes.
And then Chris Aguilar also calls it solid superhero fun with more personality than most of the slop we've gotten in the last 8 months. People are calling it fun.
Fun. It sounds fun. Slim's son gave it a 4.5. So,
and that's what it's about.
That's what it's about.
But you know who our superhero is?
That is the exact transition I was about to make. Superheroes for Mia and myself, George Clooney, Julia Roberts, coming in hot to save the rom-com, Ticket to Paradise. Only 12,000 watch lists. Let's get that up.
We can get, come on,
we
guys.
We can easily get to 100,000 by the end of this recording, I think.
Yes.
Coming in wide in theaters. Everybody go see it. The synopsis, a divorced couple teams up and travels to Bali to stop their daughter from making the same mistake they think they made 25 years ago. Mia, sell the people. Ticket to Paradise. Let's go.
Here's the thing. You could have read any combination of words for that synopsis. It could have been anything, and I would have bought my Ticket to Paradise. They are here to save us, as you said. And it's directed by Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again's Al Parker. I saw that film 5 times in theaters, just as you saw Money Monster 3 times in theaters.
Money Monster. Let's go. We're getting the reappraisal.
Yes. Yes. Money Monster reappraisal. So yeah, I'm all in on my Ticket to Paradise. Mitchell, more thoughts? So
I blacked out when I read the synopsis. I don't need to know anything. I made the nice header, the backdrop on Letterboxd. It's Julia Roberts, big smile. You see the teeth. George Clooney in the background looking like a little scamp. It's going to be a blast. I'm very excited. I want to see this movie. This is my Black Adam. Ticket to Paradise is going to change the hierarchy of my soul.
Yes.
Put that on the poster.
Put that on the poster. Yes. Let's get some reviews, because unfortunately we have not been able to see it yet, which is a huge tragedy. But some lucky people have, because it has been released overseas where it's already making bank. It's already
good money.
Its budget. Yeah, yeah. So it's rippling waves overseas. So here's a review from Just Mia's Life. Another Mia. Wow. Still overwhelmed by the already long forgotten feeling of how much joy blooper reels at the end credits of rom-coms can give you. So that's newsworthy. There is a blooper reel at the end of this film.
Lucy Rutherford's review says, Julia Roberts jumpsuits MVP. Very basic, but I had a good time. It's pleasantly inoffensive, and Julia Roberts and George Clooney's chemistry and comic timing are impeccable and delightful. Extra half star for bloopers in the credits. The movement is happening. Black Adam, where's the bloopers in the credits?
They might have them. They'll probably do Slim? A post-credit scene. I've heard there's an infamous post-credit scene for Black Adam.
Do they have Harry Styles at the post-credits? Eternals? What's up?
Let's sadly move on from Ticket to Paradise, even though we could do a whole episode on it, even though we haven't seen it. Let's look back at the previous week. Let's see how the movies that came out last weekend fared, you know, some physical releases, what our community is saying, and if you want your review or list potentially featured on an upcoming episode, just add the tag, hashtag weekend watch list.
Yeah, so Decision to Leave was the big one from last week, Park Chan-wook. It's got a 3.9 average on Letterboxd. You and Slim graciously read my review. I'm a huge fan of this movie. We've got some more reviews in now. Josh Larson from Film Spotting reviewed it and said, the formal dexterity was expected, though still dazzling. The emotional resonance? Now that was a shocker, which I agree. It's, again, just like After Sun, I'm sure, very similar films. It sneaks up on you, the emotions of Decision to Leave.
Yeah, and we have a review from Darren that calls it a film of obsession and love. I got to agree with you. Don't really think of Park Chan-wook as like a romantic guy, considering how like hyper-violent his films are. But this one really is oozing with love and obsession. And he's just so brilliant at that. We also have Halloween Ends that came out, directed by David Gordon Green. 2.4 average, so it's sinking a little bit, but Slim has a great review. Not me tearing up like an absolute lunatic while watching Halloween 13.
When Slim is back with you next week, you've got to probe him for some deeper Halloween Ends talk, because I've got to know what's up. I got to know what's up with that.
Don't worry. I will, because there, I just want to say real quick, I don't know if we have time for this, but there are a lot of fans of the film. I just went to go see My Chemical Romance, and my car was filled with Halloween Ends appreciators. Like, that was the car conversation was talking about how it's like so misunderstood. So yeah. Don't let the 2.4 necessarily deter you. I know a lot of fans of it.
Very polarizing all over the map. But I know that you also, along with seeing My Chemical Romance, you also maybe can give us a little tease of a movie that you just saw yesterday. You saw Bones and All. Somebody will talk about it more next month.
I would love
when it comes
to be
out. I'm sure you'll be on the episode. But you want to give people a little bit of a tease for what they'll hear?
For My Cannibal Romance.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Perfect. That's the tagline, I think.
Yeah, right? That's the tagline. That's the headline for all of our journal stories. That's going to be the hashtag. Yeah. No, I did manage to see Bones and All, which I'm so thrilled about, because that was one of my most anticipated, along with Ticket to Paradise, of course. How am I not going to love a bisexual Timothée Chalamet romantic cannibal story? Like, are you kidding? Grow up. Get real. Like, I'm going to love that. It's so in my wheelhouse. So it's not as gory and disgusting as people are really hyping it up to be. I saw all these reports that are like, people are passing out and throwing up at NIFF. But I'm like, you guys are weenies. This is not so bad. It's just like a very tender story of, you know, as we said, with Decision to Leave, obsession and love. Similar vein, but very different way of storytelling.
I'm excited to hear more about it. I will quickly shout out, there's another new movie that came out today. We're recording this on Wednesday, the day before it drops. A movie that came out today on Netflix called The Stranger. It's an Australian movie directed by Thomas Wright, who I mostly know as an actor from the first season of Top of the Lake, which he was really great in. Premiered at Cannes, has kind of like a low radar. So I just wanted to put a little bit of a spotlight on that for people who might be interested in it.
There's one more thing I forgot to call out too that you reminded me of when you started talking about actors you adore. Raymond and Ray is out on Apple TV Plus, starring Ethan Hawke and Ewan McGregor. We don't even need to say what it's about, but they're playing brothers. So that should be enough of a sell for you. Just wanted to throw that in. Raymond and Ray.
Yeah, I watched it last night. And the big disappointment is that I get that they're playing brothers, but like, you can have them kiss once. Like, why not? Just one time.
Just once. Come on. It's what the people want.
Just one time.
Yeah.
So let's check in on our, you know, we'll get into the last section, everybody's favorite section, the watch list shuffle. The last time that you were on with Slim, you shuffled and got High Fidelity, a film that I adored as a teenager, have not seen in a while, have been curious how I would feel if I watched it recently. How did you feel about John Cusack in High Fidelity?
So first off, I want to read the HBO logline. For those who don't know, music-obsessed record store manager John Cusack tries to show his ex-girlfriend the same passion he has for vinyl in this comedy. And that made my friend I watched it with go, uh-oh.
That sounds like many, many women's nightmares.
Yeah, you're like, oh no, I don't know about that. But and he is one of the most insufferable characters ever to grace the silver screen. But also, he is me. He is we. He is all of us in regards to our deep passion for physical media. He's like constantly reorganizing and going over his record collection, which is so us with our Blu-rays.
Yeah.
And he does learn. Like, there is character development, thankfully. And, you know, movies don't have to be about learning a lesson, but you really are watching this thinking like, I hope this guy learns a lesson, because he does not know about about women. But I did really enjoy it, because I used to work at a record store, in fact. Yes, Amoeba Music in Hollywood, California. And they told me that the film High Fidelity is the perfect example of what not to do while working there. They were like, you need to be a lot nicer than the characters in that movie.
There's a lot of judgment from the characters.
A lot of judgment. And they were like, do not do that to the customers' faces. but I'm glad this was remade as a TV series with Zoe Kravitz also, because I do like it when girls are weird and opinionated about art and media. I think it's fun. I also would just really love to share Sasha Seinfeld's 4-star review. She is the Jerry Seinfeld's daughter, by the way.
Big news. Yeah, big breaking story.
Yes, she is on Letterboxd. Yes, one of my most prized mutuals. Keep in mind that it's 4 stars when I read it. This man's narcissism was unbelievable. He bolstered his self-confidence by using female pain as a way to shirk responsibility and introspection. He sees himself as the center of everyone's life and can't fathom the possibility that he's undesirable or unwanted. Character development was great, but character arc was a little unclear, which I agree with completely, including like the high rating. I think it's really cool to be able to pull off a movie where the main character is this unlikable, but you still love the movie. I don't know. I think that's really, really hard.
It feels very realistic because he like learns some lessons, but he still is like a dude who needs to do a lot of work at the end. And I feel like that's accurate.
It's very accurate, very authentic. One last thing I just have to say is Jack Black is the star of the show. He's wonderful. So what did you get, Mitchell?
I got a film called The Funeral, not the Abel Ferrara one, which I also love. This one is directed by Juuso Itami, who's the director of Tampopo, which is one of my favorite movies. This film, The Funeral, came out in 1984. I'll just briefly, it is a man dies, older man in a family, and it's basically about the whole family, extended family and close family coming together for his funeral. It definitely, like, the first half plays out more or less straight with, like, going through the minutiae of, like, funeral arrangements and everything with, like, some sardonic humor, but also more or less, like, straightforward, a little bit of, like, humor in the procedural elements of that, which I think felt pretty accurate. And then the second half, when like the more extended family rolls in, gets kind of bonkers. Like there's one character who is the like mistress of the man who died's son-in-law. And she shows up at the funeral unwelcome and is basically the most like maniacally horny person you've ever seen in a movie. There's some scenes with her that are truly nuts. It's definitely a fun movie. I didn't love it as much as Tampopo, but that's a pretty high bar to set.
Oh yeah.
So I would definitely recommend people checking it out. I mentioned when I was on my last episode with Slim that the second movie on my watch list shuffle was Space Truckers, the Stuart Gordon, who directed Reanimator, movie from the 90s with Dennis Hopper about space truckers. I did end up watching that last night, and it's a movie about space truckers.
So the movie is about space truckers.
It's about truckers in space, if you could believe it.
Okay.
Let's check out some reviews from people shuffling their watch list along with us, tagging on Weekend Watch List. We'll hit on a quick few of these. I want to shout out Angel's review of Friday the 13th, who just says, that's what you get for wearing jorts. Which I felt, Mia, how do you feel about jorts? I feel like jorts are kind of cool.
Jorts are, well, how long are the jorts?
That's a fair, if they're short jorts, they are solid for in my
yeah,
books.
Yeah, I wear short jorts all the time.
Long jorts?
Hate crime.
That yep. Short jorts, you're good. Long jorts, hate crime. It's crime. a very wide scale. Very extreme scale.
We have a review from Hope of my beloved Tar. Never could have predicted that I would live to see Kate Blanchett use the term U-Haul lesbian in a Criterion level movie.
There you go. Yes. U-Haul lesbians are wearing some jorts, let's be honest.
And we will not be hate criming.
Not. They are good. You are good. You are
welcome.
That's an
exception. That is a huge exception to the rule.
I'll shout out one more review. I'll shout out Trip Burton's review of A Hard in Winter. Trip says, Daniel Auteuil is one of the greatest living actors, and this is a wonderful vehicle for his interiority. He simmers throughout this entire movie, and Emmanuel Baird manages to match him. The film itself drags on a little too much, but manages to wallop a punch still. So, Hard in Winter. I saw that movie when I was a teenager, and I thought it was very good. So I was excited that Trip reviewed that. So Let's head into our own watch lists.
Oh, I always forget about this part.
Yeah, I did it like a minute ago to have it prepared. We will head into our own watch list to see what we will get to discuss next time, sort by shuffle and filter by service stream only, see what pops up. Mia, what did you get?
Oh, this is a funny one again. It's our girl, Julia Roberts. Kind of
Julia.
Exciting. So let's do the big reveal. It is Mona Lisa Smile 2003 by Mike Newell. I've never seen this one, obviously, but you know, if you put feminist in the synopsis, like I kind of legally have to watch it. So
yeah, I haven't seen it either, but I know that my friends Chris File and Joe Reed, who do the This at Oscar Buzz podcast, it was like their first movie that they did, like those movies that have the Oscar buzz and then don't get any nominations and just people kind of forget about. So I'll be curious to hear what you think. I know Kiki Dunst, our good old pal,
yes.
Kirsten Dunst is in it. It's got a great cast.
Cast is stacked. I'm looking at it. It's Julia Roberts, Kirsten Dunst, Julia Stiles, Maggie Gyllenhaal, Jennifer Goodwin, Marsha Gay Harden, John Slattery, Topher Grace. Sorry.
Apologies for anybody who have their volume up high. But Topher, it's deserved. Let's be honest.
Oh my God, I'm so excited. Okay, yeah, I got a great one. Wow. What did you get?
I got, so by not unfortunately not starring Topher Grace, I got the film Convoy from 1978, Sam Peckinpah directed. It is about, I'm presuming, a convoy. The synopsis is kind of long, but I'll try to blast through it here. Trucker Rubber Duck and his buddies Pigpen, Widow Woman, and Spider Mike use their CB radios to warn one another of the presence of cops. Mia is cracking up right now. But conniving Sheriff Wallace is hip to the trucker's tactics and begins tricking the drivers through his own CB broadcasts. Facing constant harassment from the law, Rubber Duck and his pals use their radios to coordinate a vast convoy and rule the road. It sounds like a blast. My friend Dan Mecca from the B-Side podcast recommended it to me a while back when we were talking about road movies, him and me. And I just looked at the poster, which is Kris Kristofferson bare-chested in a pair of jeans, his thumbs like in his belt buckle, just looking hot as hell. Ally McGraw is like draped over him. It's one of the coolest posters I've ever seen. The second I saw that poster, I was like, I gotta check this out. It is on Tubi. I own it on Blu-ray. Sophie, you can put that in your list of the movies that I own on Blu-ray that I haven't watched yet, but I will watch it within the next 2 weeks. Very exciting.
It sounds like they're Earth truckers.
They are. Mia, very, very astute. I am going from space truckers to Earth truckers. God bless you for pointing that out. What a great observation. What will I get next on my trucker journey?
The Juliette Binoche trucker movie that came out this year.
I still need to see it! Paradise Highway!
Paradise Highway! Ticket to Paradise Highway.
Thanks so much for listening to Weekend Watchlist, brought to you by The Letterboxd Show. You can follow Mia Mitchell, that's me, with about 96,000-97,000 less followers than Mia, on our HQ page on Letterboxd using the links in our episode notes if you have the time. Maybe consider rating the podcast on Spotify or leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. It helps spread the word about the show.
Thank you to our crew, and thanks to Letterboxd member Trent Walton for the theme music, Eyes On. Thanks to Jack for the facts and Sophie Shin for the episode transcript. And of course, to you for listening. Weekend Watchlist is a Tape Deck production. This is a Tape Deck podcast.